When you haven't found love, it can feel like everyone else has. It's in every movie, every song, and all the PDA. Looking for love sucks. Thankfully, California Psychics can give you the guidance you need to find the one. We guarantee, if your reading isn't life-changing, it's free. And new customers receive 20 minutes for just $20. Visit CaliforniaPsychics.com and experience the joy of certainty. California Psychics.
Welcome in on this Tuesday afternoon on Gwynn and Chris. Tony Gwynn Jr. Matt Scraby is back in the building.
Finally. Oh, and Mary hijinks and you will follow.
I was about to say, you will quickly learn that that means whatever smoothness you have experienced in the last couple of days, out the window. Back to chaos we go, which might be our comfort zone, I must say. Scraby,
I was a little uncomfortable the last few days. Adam Klug was running such a tight ship. You know, I wasn't prepared for that.
He is on top of it, I got to say. It is nerve-wracking when you're doing a show with your boss in the room because, like, you say something and then you look over and he's, like, maybe, like, cringing or something. You're like, oh, man, maybe I shouldn't have said that. It's very awkward. But Adam's great.
Adam did a great job.
I just walked myself into a circle to put my foot in my mouth.
We're happy to have Uncle Scraby back.
Why do you keep calling me
Because
Uncle
Scraby? Because you posted a picture of yourself with your sister's new baby.
Yep, and, my nephew.
You looked very uncle-like in that
Thank
photo.
Thank you. I am full-blown uncle, for sure.
Yeah, you're a good uncle.
Yes. So. I shared
full-blown
a bathroom with...
uncle, he calls himself.
I shared a bathroom on vacation with my 10-year-old niece and 8-year-old niece, and it is...
I'm sorry for them.
Yeah, right.
They have so many different hair products. I've never seen so many different hair products for a 10-year-old and an 8-year-old in my life. It was crazy.
Interesting. Would not have expected that.
Well, we're happy to have you back Scrabe. Welcome back. Padres get a thrilling walk-off victory yesterday, and perhaps was one of their, if not their best comeback this season so far. I mean, down 5-1.
Yeah.
In the fifth, they responded immediately with five runs of their own to take the take the lead, and then after the Mets were able to kind of claw it back, the Padres were able to find a way to get some more runs of their own. Walk off fashion, Elias Diaz with the single to left brings in the game winner, and the Padres take game one. They snap the win streak. What was it? Seven.
Yeah.
Ten?
Seven in a row that they had won.
Seven in a row.
You know, this is what we're talking about. This team, you know, on the first glance, you know, seems to have a lot of warts. But the one thing that they've had all year is the ability to buckle down and gut out victories. I mean, this is their 23rd win by one run that leads baseball. And you're right, Tony, and I think I'm right, and everyone in the stadium was right. As soon as the ball by Vientos cleared the fence and there was grand slam and Dylan Cease exits, you're like, okay, that's it for Dylan Cease, but that's also the end of this game. We're not coming back from 5-1. Yeah. We never score. Well, guess what? The Mets do have a bad bullpen, so let's state that up front. But, you know, the Padres got the first – five of those runs against the starter, Montas. So they went right to work. It was really impressive. And here's the thing that sticks out to me more than anything. First of all, I'm happy for Elias Diaz. He's taken nothing but, you know, heat all year long. The fan base, I'm sure himself, he knows he's, you know, he's a former all-star. I know he wants to be having a better season. I'm so happy for him to come up with that, a two-out hit and the whole thing. So good for him. But the thing that stood out to me, Tony, was they're down 5-3. Arise hits the two-run homer. And then with two outs, you got a guy or two on base, and you've got 7-8-9 coming up. And what has happened all year with 7-8-9? It's like, you know, automatic outs. Not last night. Cronenworth, RBI. Johnson, RBI. Diaz, RBI. And now you're leading 6-5. That is the very definition of a team and everybody chipping in. And you look, they get a great win. That's a great win, no doubt.
That's why, you know, I thought the Padres – They gave themselves a chance. I'll even go before that. Padres in the second inning.
Okay.
They don't score in this inning. However, they set it up so that they could get a run back. Remember, they tied it in the third.
Right.
And that happened because with two outs in the second, Jake Cronenworth walked, and Bryce Johnson gets that infield single. That forced Maldonado to the plate. He ends up punching out. But you got the top of the lineup coming up the following
inning.
Right. That ends up leading. You know, Manny gets hit by the pitch. He comes around to score. If Johnson doesn't get the hit, it's a small thing, but it moved the line so that you could have the top of the lineup in the third. They tie the game up there. And from there, they kind of set themselves up at that point. The last guy who made the out in the third was Sheet. So that left 7, 8, 9 in the fourth. They go 1, 2, 3, and then what do you have in the fifth? You got the top of the lineup once again. 1, 2, 3, and they just proceeded to hit around, I think, 10, 11 guys.
10 batters, yeah, 10, 11 batters. Look,
yeah,
Tony, I mean, this is not a team any of us recognize the last two games, right? They've had 29 hits combined. They've also
we recognize them. We just haven't seen them in a couple of months.
We haven't seen them do this. They also had 6 hits with runners in scoring position on Sunday. They had 7 last night, and they had 31 at bats the last two games with runners in scoring position. That's a lot of traffic. You know, don't even have to be good at hitting with runners in scoring position if you get that many chances. But they have been good. Look, this was great. I loved it. The bullpen, did its thing again. I thought, Suarez would just finish it off there and it'd be another one of these, four horsemen games. But look, you throw enough 100-mile-an-hour fastballs to big league hitters, somebody can get one. And the nice thing is they just came right back out and won the game. So look, they're playing immediately after a 4-game losing streak, 3-game win streak. And this has been the secret sauce for them all year, Tony. They find a way to bounce right back just when you're about ready to give up the ship. So
I think that truly is their real secret sauce, right? Yeah. I mean, and that's the sauce that has given them success over the last two seasons. They've had this kind of we're not gonna fold. Like, we're gonna keep fighting. Even if we lose this game, we're gonna keep fighting you. And I think in the midst of watching a relatively inconsistent offense, that gets lost. That even in some of those games that they lost, they always keep playing. They don't ever just fold the tent in. And last night was just, a good example of it. But it just feels like this is starting to turn offensively. You've been seeing, I think you mentioned it, Chris, last week before we ended the show, what, 4 out of those 10 games, the Padres scored 7 or more runs?
That's right. And now another one last night, yeah.
Now you add this one to the mix. That may be the sign that we've been looking for. The fact that they could, they've been able to put up multiple crooked numbers. You just hope they can continue it, for sure.
You got to, and I mean, it's almost laughable to say, where are the Xander Bogaerts haters now? Because it's now been a month and a half. The guy's got the best batting average in all of baseball during that time. 375. 3 more hits last night. Machado has the best batting average in the National League at the moment because Will Smith doesn't have enough at-bats to qualify.
Still?
Well, he's right there, but he needs one or two more. So for the moment, officially, Manny at 302 is the NL leader. And Arise has snapped out of it since the All-Star break.
He had 2 more last night.
I heard a rumor this morning, and we keep hearing them. I think AJ Preller said he's good. I'm joking.
Phone lines just lit up.
I thought I'd scare the hell out of everybody out there.
But,
go ahead.
Do you think that Dylan Cease was pitching like his job with the Padres was on the line? Because I don't think he wants to get traded.
I think he's
Wait, time out. He's pitching like his job was on the line?
Like, yeah. Basically, like, if he throw, maybe he throws a lights-out game, they keep him. He doesn't. They decide to trade. I know it doesn't work that easy.
Well, we talked about it yesterday. I don't know what we should have rooted for last night. Because if he threw a lights-out game, maybe the teams would want him even more.
I'm about
more.
To say, it's damned if he throws well. Yeah, it could make you leave, but it could also be, like, sweeten the pot for somebody. Like, right. So...
He pitched like he's pitched all season, unfortunately for him. 9 strikeouts. I mean, he was dominating when he was on. And, you know, then he would just get off. And, you walk the bases loaded and you get behind a big league hitter, 3-1. You got no choice. You got to come in there. You can't walk in the run. And there it goes. So, it's been like that for
that
him.
That is very... I mean, I think it's almost identical to how you've seen him pitch throughout the year. And so, you know, I don't know. It's clear that he is a piece that teams are coveting. Ken Rosenthal just dropped a big-time article just on that story alone. Dylan Cease has become a prime target specifically for the Astros. So we'll get into some of that. On the other side, the crew is back together on this Tuesday afternoon. Game 2, Mets, Padres, 6:40 tonight. We'll discuss more on the other side. More going to Chris.
Now the pitch, and Vientos sends it in the air to right field. That's well struck. Fernando's going back. He is at the wall. He leaps up, and he had it, then he dropped it, and the umpires will say it's an out. What a play by Fernando. Went up and took a home run away from Vientos. And one down here in the bottom of the fourth inning.
Yeah, almost forgotten in the comeback last night. Another web gem, as it were, by a Padre outfielder. I don't know if you're keeping track, Tony. You are a former home run stealer yourself. Now, that's at least 3 or 4 that I remember, like, in the last couple of weeks. Guys going up over the wall. And grabbing
from our outfield, is
yeah,
that
from our
about?
Guys? Yeah, they're
yeah.
doing it.
Yeah, no, we've definitely had some highway robberies out there, and that one was most impressive because he didn't have a running start. He got there and like kind of had to just do a straight vert jump, and boy, athletic. Alien is
Fernando,
probably a better term.
Fernando has a little athletic ability. By the way, Tony, I didn't ask you about it yesterday, but. Jose Iglesias' backhand flip running toward right field on Sunday. You know, these are things that we don't appreciate probably enough, but I love stuff like that. And, you know, Iglesias has been giving us that kind of stuff with the hands all year long.
That was ridiculous. Just like
that
the around
ridiculous.
The back. I'm just going to roll this just to give Crone a chance to pick it up. Like, it was. He's a magician.
He is. And Sam Levitt asked him about it before the game yesterday, and he kind of just shook his head.
Like, that's what he does.
Right. This is pretty normal. I mean, he wasn't arrogant about it. He was just saying, I mean, I practice. I work hard. I have, you know.
Right. I expect to make that kind
right.
of play.
I expect to do stuff like that. All right. We got a bunch of stuff coming up.
Real quick before we get into that.
Yeah.
Yesterday, we lost another baseball great, and Ryan Steinberg.
It
messed me up pretty good yesterday. I wasn't expecting. I found out Rick Sutcliffe had some people up, and he was kind of talking to us, and he kind of broke the news. And it was just he had already known, I think. So he said it like when he said it, it just like took a little bit to compute.
Yeah.
Before, and you know, it kind of messed up my broadcast a little bit. I won't lie, I was struggling with it throughout the day, and I just wanted to share this, and I shared it a little bit with Jesse yesterday. You know, I got the privilege to play for Ryan when I was in Philly in 2014, which also happened to coincide with like one of the tougher years for me because of my father and his dealing with him being sick at that time. And he just seemed to understand what was going on and really kind of handled me in a way that allowed me to just be able to focus on baseball, but also not be afraid to, you know, have emotions on my sleeve because of what I was dealing with. And he had a better manager for me specifically at that time. And I'm very grateful. So it was tough for me because to see him suffer the same fate ultimately that my dad did was it was just jarring to hear. We had seen him earlier this year in Chicago. He was out,
and he was doing better, right? That he had a reoccurrence of the cancer a month or two ago,
and that happened so fast. And then time they announced the reoccurrence part,
man, so
awful. Really sad,
right, Tony? I mean, we all find out, you know, on our way. I was actually, sitting down to look at my phone last night and saw Barry Bloom write about it on Facebook, and when I first read it, the way it was presented was that his cancer had come back and he wasn't doing well. So I was really disappointed. And then I read further. And then my heart dropped. Ryan Sandberg, to me, has always been linked to your dad in a weird way in my mind, but maybe to whatever. But in 1984, that was your dad's coming out party. And that was the Padres. And that was the Cubs. And the MVP that year was Ryan Sandberg. And the moment that I'll never forget, I'm sure you won't, was the final game when your dad smoked that shot up the middle. And Sandberg, who was as good a second baseman as ever, it was just hit too hard. He just couldn't get it. And it whisked by him, right? And Tony got the win.
It was a ground ball that my dad ultimately got a triple on.
Unbelievable.
Because it was hit so hard. But, they have ultimately been tied together for a very long time. And,
I get choked up. I get a little choked up thinking about it. And I did last night. And as I wrote today, this is happening way too much, all walks of life. But in baseball, too, this is the 20th Hall of Famer we've lost since COVID. That is not very long time. And it just, Tony, you're a little younger than me, Scraby, but feels like just kind of a lot of the fun parts of my baseball being a fan are, disappearing like this. And it really hits every time. So,
first off, for sure, you're not just a tad older than me, so.
Right. I'm a tad old. All right. Whatever. You're such a schmo.
We're
like in the most serious moment of the show, and you're like, worried about that.
No, I
I'm not gonna lie. I appreciate you changing it up because I was starting to get emotional. I appreciate the laugh.
I'm great at. I'm the guy who walks into a funeral telling a joke so everybody laughs. But as a kid, I didn't know much about him, but I definitely knew his name. I even had a mitt that was a Ryan Sandberg mitt, and so that's why I was always.
Pretty much every kid that's named Ryan. They got their name from Ryan Sandberg. Like that was like the first.
The only
real,
one I know, yeah, right.
Right. So like I mean,
kept getting his name wrong though.
Stanek last night or a Ryan Nelson. Like I mean, these guys, they have the influence. I mean, that's kind of where player Sandberg was.
And if you're able to make kind of a link to it, Andre Dawson of the Cubs was the MVP 3 years after Sandberg. And he said today that part of himself died with Ryan Sandberg. Andre Dawson was completely choked up, could not even really speak. This is a big loss for baseball, but even bigger for the city of Chicago and Cubs fans everywhere. Ryan Sandberg is a, I don't know that he's to your dad's level, but he's pretty close to it. Maybe Ernie Banks will always be Mr. Cub, but Ryan Sandberg
certainly
is right there.
Certainly as a human being, he was. I can tell you that for sure.
You know who else was a great human being? Ernie Banks. And, there was a really nice post today by somebody of Ernie Banks welcoming Ryan Sandberg with open arms through the gates of heaven.
Oh, wow.
It was quite emotional.
That is tough. Yeah.
It was. But, that's what it means to a lot of people today. So I definitely wanted to talk about it, Tony, and we do have Buster Olney coming up in about 15 minutes, and I know he will want to speak a little bit on the life and times of Ryan Sandberg. Couple of quick notes, because everybody wants to know about the trade deadline. There was one trade just made a little while ago, and it's a bit interesting.
Sir Anthony
Dominguez, the old right-hander, it's going from the Orioles to the Blue Jays. But in a sense, Tony, he's just picking up his gear, walking down the hallway, and going over to the other locker room. Those two teams are playing each other today in a doubleheader, and they're between games right now. So,
basically he gets to put his stress off for at least 3 days. But after that, he's still going to have to move all his stuff from Baltimore to wherever he's going. So enjoy your three-day hiatus of not having to worry about it, but it's going to end shortly.
That was the one trade that's been made today. The Orioles beat the Blue Jays in the first game 16-4 and tied a major league record in that game with 5 sacrifice flies, which means nothing to anyone other than people like me who keep track of stuff like that. I bet you Jesse will like that stat. I don't know why. It just seems like that might be
something. What was the stat again?
The Orioles tied a record with 5 sacrifice flies.
The Orioles tied a record with 5 sack flies today. Yeah, I'm telling Jesse now to see if. No reaction.
Even Jesse
thinks
that
that's ridiculous and stupid. Yeah. That's fair. I get it.
We need you for those reasons, though, because I would have never known.
Nobody would ever know that.
I would have never known.
And nobody would care, evidently.
That stat line was a little bonkers.
Eugenio Suarez.
Wait, hold up. Jesse's got some chiming in.
Wait, okay. I just want to make sure I got it right for the broadcast later. Yeah. So the Orioles in game one of their doubleheader today had 5 sacrifice flies.
And remember, Jesse, the sacrifice fly was not put into play until the late 40s.
Right. So it counted against you as an at-bat until the 40s. So a lot of those old-school batting averages would have actually been higher.
Yeah.
And the story that goes with that, Jesse, is that Ted Williams in his 406 season would have hit 413 had they given him sacrifice flies. So, yes.
That's right. That's part of the reason they changed it. But that was the record is 5, huh?
5 was the record. They had 5.
I would have guessed more.
And me too.
Yeah, I can see that. Yeah. I see that, especially in olden days, back in the early 1900s.
They didn't have it in 1900, Tony. They didn't have the sacrifice fly.
Okay,
so
come on, Tony.
Hey, Jesse, thanks for feigning interest. I appreciate it.
It's in range of my kind of thing. Yeah.
Okay.
I think the best stat that Jesse
had to sit on him a little bit because when I first said it, he didn't really react. And then he thought about it.
It doesn't do much for me, but it's like good to be aware of it, I would say.
Yeah, it's not the
best
the
stat that Jesse's ever delivered for stat of the game was when Yu Darvish pitched to Martin Maldonado and they were born on the same day of the same year in 2 different spots in the world. That is incredible.
See, people remember that. That's crazy.
That's a good one.
That was a really good one.
It was only like the whatever time that had happened with a pitcher.
That is the kind of thing that people look to you for, Jesse, not sacrifice fly statistics. So.
Thank you, Jesse.
Good enough.
Anytime,
thank you, guys.
You're always welcome to pop on there.
Please.
Jesse out there, of course, at the ballpark with Tony. They're in the booth. Tony will have the call a little bit later on. We're going to take a break, step aside. Buster Olney will join us. We'll see what he's hearing on the Major League Baseball trade deadline rumors. Also, and I don't know if we are going to have enough time, but I do want to hear from him on Sandberg. I'm also curious what he thinks of Bryce Harper nearly punching out Rob Manfred. So we'll hear from Buster.
I love that everybody is locked in on that, the particular part of Manfred firing back. I'm not going to get the F out of this locker room. That was the exact quote that was
in
the story.
It was like this. Bryce, I'm not going to get the F out of this locker room.
I bet you he was backing up as he said it,
too. Yeah, I mean, Rob Manfred, I've seen the guy. He is not an intimidating presence. I would assume that Bryce Harper was very scary in that moment.
I'd be shaking a little. All right, more Gwynn and Chris coming up. Good show underway.
2:35 on the clock, Tony Bridge. Chris Ello, Matt Scraby. Hanging with you. Buster Olney will join us shortly. Talk a little bit about this upcoming deadline. Get his thoughts on the passing of Ryan Sandberg. I'll also get his thoughts on the Harper-Manfred showdown in the Philadelphia Phillies locker room.
Heavyweight bout.
Heavyweight bout. Yeah, exactly. We'll get to a little bit of it all. Of course, Ken Rosenthal reporting that the Astros are fresh on the tail of Dylan Cease and perhaps wanting to acquire him. They have been depleted by injuries to that starting rotation. I'm just trying to rack my brain on who the Padres would be getting in return.
Well, I'll take Yordan Alvarez. Is he healthy yet?
You said you were done. I heard.
I might even take.
I heard Fromber earlier. Like,
yeah, right.
Yeah, I don't think those two guys are coming back with any package.
I don't either.
That's going out there. But you start to look at their roster, right? And you're trying to figure out A, you don't know who their prospects are. Who are the close ones? And then you look at their big league roster. Who can they give that can help? And it's hard to find the matches there.
It's finally, you know, left field isn't, jump out of you. You know, Jose Altuve has been playing left field. I don't know that he's going to be included in anything. Chaz right. McCormick, does he Cooper Hummel? I mean, these are your left fielders for the – Taylor Trammell is an outfielder. We've had him already. So, yeah, I don't know that the Astros – makes sense as a fit.
Maybe if indeed this is a move that they are entertaining, maybe it's a move to acquire some prospects to then flip to get
maybe
someone else in.
Or we could always get Josh Hader for Scraby and all the Hader fans out there.
Why did I just get thrown under the bus?
Because you're in my sight lines, I guess.
Okay.
Yep, you're next to him, so
fair
it was
enough.
Easy to pick on you there. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see kind of how this all kind of shakes out. Obviously, I'll just read you some of the excerpts out of the story. Jim Crane, fancy star power. San Diego Padres right-hander Dylan Cease is one of the biggest stars available in the trade market. He goes on to say Cease, 29, would stabilize the Astros' injury-depleted rotation for the rest of the season. He'll join Hunter Brown, Framber Valdez to give the team a potential dominant three. Where else does he say on here? Names under consideration. Oh, nope, that's not it. But for Crane, an owner who traded twice for Justin Verlander and once for Zach Greinke, has tried to acquire Blake Snell and Josh Hader from the Padres during the 2023 deadline. See, surely is a more interesting target than some of the other names that I skipped over there. It doesn't really give, who the names are, in terms of coming back.
Yeah. I'm looking at one of their prospects here, Jacob Melton, who's a left-handed hitting left fielder. He is up, has been up a little bit this year with, 32 at-bats for the Astros, but a slugger, and he's kind of their second-rated left fielder or outfielder in their second-rated prospect. But I don't know that the Padres want prospect, unless you said they're going to be flip it somewhere else. So.
Well, let's talk to somebody who knows way more about this type of stuff than we do. Let's go to Buster Olney, our friend of the show, ESPN. You see him often on the sidelines. Buster, how are you, man? Thanks for coming on today.
My head is spinning. What day is it? What century is it? You get it, it's motive. Reminds me of being back in college, and you're studying for a final exam. And your head just full of facts and figures and names and all kinds of things. And as I'm saying this, I it's probably not an apt comparison because I didn't do well in college, I promise you.
Well, listen,
welcome
that
to the club.
Makes a couple.
And we've all been incredibly successful, so there you go.
Buster, I mean, when do you think the first, like, real domino will fall? Because it just seems like right now, I mean, the deadline's Thursday. We're 48 hours out. I mean, at what point do you think the first big domino falls?
Yeah, it's like there was a poker game, and every round, everybody, check,
yeah,
check, check.
Right.
And that's the way it feels. I texted with an executive earlier today who's involved in the starting pitching market, and I asked him about a couple of guys, and he was like, it's a slow developing market. I think that, you know, that eventually there's going to be a barrage of deals. I mean, the dam is backed up. All of these contenders are looking for relief pitching. There's going to be a million of those, I think, to get traded between now and the deadline. I think the starting pitching market, eventually some of these teams that, are holding out hope that maybe the price comes down on Joe Ryan of the Twins, or maybe the price comes down on Dylan Cease, they will start to grab guys like Charlie Morton of the Baltimore Orioles, you know, guys who are more like 3-4s versus guys who could start game 1, game 2 of the playoffs. I would not be surprised if later tonight we start to see that barrage, because at some point you got to get business done. The Orioles have like six guys they want to trade. The Tampa Bay Rays might wind up trading four guys. The Diamondbacks, you know, have three, four guys to go. So it's coming.
Buster Olney, of course, is with us, and we're giving him a rest so that he doesn't have to call a bunch of general managers for the next 15 minutes. Buster, you mentioned Cease. You know, he's been wildly inconsistent this year, although the strikeouts are there.
Yeah.
Let's ask from the Padres' perspective, though. If they parted with Cease, and it does seem to be heating up, what do they do, or what do they need back, you know, to make it make sense for a team that is still leading the wild card in the National League?
Yeah, major league controllable players.
Yeah.
Who can help them right away. I agree, Chris, with what you're just saying. You didn't know if the Padres are necessarily going for prospects. They're not. They're in a win-now window. They have an older team, generally speaking, with a rotation that's got to turn over in the next couple of years, and they need assets that can help them right now. They can't wait. And so, based on my conversations with other teams, what they're telling me is, and I'm just pulling names out of the air, okay? I'm not saying that the Padres are interested in these guys. Luis Angel Acuña of the Mets, Brett Beatty of the Mets, Mark Vientos of the Mets, those type of guys who would be under team control for a few years. The issue with Cease is that while he is generally regarded as a high-end starting pitcher because he throws really hard, he misses bats. You guys know better than I do. It hasn't been a great year for him.
No.
He hasn't been dominant. And the perception of other teams is that the Padres want to get paid in return. We're looking for a return that reflects him as a frontline, number one type starter versus what we've seen this year. And that, and I think other teams are wondering, if we get closer to the deadline, will the Padres blink and come down a little bit, or will there be a team that'll blink and say, yes, we're desperate because the starting pitching market is so thin, we're desperate to pay the Padres what they're looking for. But they're looking for guys who can help them this year.
Yeah, it's going to be so interesting, especially from that standpoint, because the other thing that Dylan Cease does is he pitches every fifth day. His dude is one of the top innings eaters in all of baseball.
Yep.
Not throwing the ball that great this year, but certainly has some of the other attributes that he's like. Buster Olney joins us here. And Buster, what about a team like the Atlanta Braves? I mean, Alex Anthopoulos said earlier, maybe about a month ago, that this team would not sell under any circumstance. And I took that with a caveat. Not sell maybe the core, but there's certainly some pieces that I would think that they are looking to possibly move. I mean, whether it be to the Padres or anybody for that matter.
Yeah, they're going to move a couple of bullpen guys before the deadline. Rafael Iglesias will wind up landing with another team in this a game of musical chairs with relievers among the contenders. But a guy, that I think makes some sense on paper for the Padres is Marcell Ozuna. Okay, he was an MVP candidate in 2024. There's a perception among scouts that maybe he hurt his hip early in the year. He hasn't been as good. He's got a really high walk rate, but he hasn't done as much damage. And right after the All-Star break, Brian Sitker, the manager of the Braves, who's always, basically based his lineup choices on, who's hitting well and who's not, they benched Ozuna. And they're playing their two catchers, Sean Murphy and Drake Baldwin, sharing the catching spot with the DH spot. And that's what the future is. Ozuna's contract runs out at the end of this year. He's going to be a free agent. He's owed, as we speak, about $5.25 million for the rest of the year. I suspect that whether it's the Padres or some other team, the Braves would eat most of that money. Look, it's a sunk cost for them. They're not going to get anything in return. You basically could get Marcell Ozuna for free if you're comfortable with the lack of positional flexibility, which has become a big thing in baseball that, we're seeing it with the Yankees. Aaron Judge is hurt. He comes back as a DH. What does Giancarlo Stanton do? That can cause some problems. But if you're the Padres and you're looking for a guy who could give you some thump and you don't necessarily want to give up a bunch of prospects, resources to get him, Ozuna is a really interesting name to me.
Buster Olney is with us. Buster, we got you on a day where a lot of other things are happening. So I'm going to take a little break from the trade deadline stuff because, as you said, it's all kind of guesswork at this point. But I think that story yesterday with Bryce Harper facing off against Rob Manfred is a big deal, you know, because maybe it even translates all the way out to people thinking that there will be a work stoppage. I mean, the players, Bryce Harper said it. We are not even going to let you say the word salary cap. And we know that that's going to be on the other side. So talk a little bit about that, what that face-to-face confrontation kind of signals for everybody.
So first and foremost, I think it's great that Bryce Harper spoke up. And he spoke his truth to power. The union clearly needs more of that. Look, Anthony knows probably better than anyone. His dad didn't always have the warmest relationship with the union leadership, but when it came to labor stuff, he was absolutely out there and willing to say what he thought in support of the Players Association. And so I think it's good when Bryce Harper does this. I think this is being misinterpreted to some degree. The notion that Bryce Harper is speaking on behalf of a wide swath of players. I think he's speaking on behalf of the Scott Boras clients and maybe some other guys. But personally, this whole issue really reminds me of the PED conversation back in the late 90s, okay, where, you know, the union leadership, Don Fehr, Gene Orza, just pounded the table. We're never going to have testing, privacy rights. You know, the leaders among the players would scream the same thing when you talk to them. And then when you talk to individual players privately, they kind of whisper in your ear, you know what, we kind of need testing.
Oh, okay. Because
they didn't want, they didn't want to have to deal with that question. And in 2002, Joe Girardi, Todd Zeal, other guys told Fehr and Orza, look, we need testing. And here we are. This thing that the union leadership said would never happen, that's where we are. And now, with a salary cap, you know, you get a Bryce Harper saying what he said. Max Scherzer probably feels the same way. When I talk to individual players, rank and file, you get a lot of, hey, wait a second, if this means more money for more players, why don't we talk about it? And why don't we get some information on it? I personally think, and today I've spent a lot of time talking with people on the union side saying, look, I you know, what would you read on what Bryce said? And a lot of people are saying the union leadership needs to educate itself on what a salary cap would look like because they need to articulate to the players why they don't want it because there are going to be a ton of guys whose perspective is if we can make more money for more guys, why not talk about it? Man, to stand on principle right now, I think it's a really dangerous – it's a dangerous thing for the union leadership to stand on. So many of the stories today were saying Bryce, you know, reflects the perspective of the union. And my response is, no, he reflects the perspective of the union leadership, which is very different than the rank and file.
Interesting.
Yeah, there's no doubt. This is kind of the divide and conquer. The PED thing lines up very similar, right? Because guys who were using were guys who weren't felt like they had an advantage. So that's why they kept – there was a divide in that in terms of why we should get tested because the guys at the top are the guys who were using, they were the ones benefiting from it. And so you try to even the playing field. This one is a little bit more tricky because you know, the younger guys come in and they may not be as educated on salary caps and how it all works. And I think Buster's spot on. Like, the union really wants to kind of – you know, poke a hole in this balloon that Rob Manfred is trying. They would be best served trying to educate this young group of players. Buzz, I got to ask you something about one of the news that broke yesterday, which, you know, really hit me kind of hard. Ryan Sandberg, we lose him yesterday. You know, he had been fighting, he'd been dealing with cancer. He had kind of, it had gone in remission and it returned back. And it wasn't that long after it returned that he ends up passing away. I mean, what can you tell us? What can you say about Ryan Sandberg, the player, as well as the person?
So he was, and this is lost because he didn't have, you know, a 15 to 18, 20-year period of dominance the way that a Willie Mays or a Henry Aaron did. There was about a decade in baseball where he was the best player. And in some respects, his career wind up, Mike Trout's career might wind up mirroring Ryan Sandberg, where when you talk to guys from that era, they will tell you, man, that guy was dominant. He was a, you know, gold glove second baseman, steady, doing damage as a middle infielder, putting up big numbers every year. And so he was absolutely an impact player, and that's somewhat lost because of the fact that his career was curtailed by injuries. And then he was just so respected within the sport, which is why, you know, his Hall of Fame speech, when he, you know, this is someone who he didn't, like, veer toward microphones. He wasn't, like, the most quotable player during his time. He's relatively understated, relatively quiet. So when he, in his Hall of Fame speech, basically stood up there on the podium and said he came out against PED users, and was really strong about it. It got people's attention because it came from Ryan Sandberg. You know, it's interesting. I think that, you know, we only recently saw the Cubs reuniting with Sammy Sosa, and I think a lot of that was out of respect for Ryan Sandberg because of what Sandberg said at the Hall of Fame.
We're losing too many of these guys. You know, it's been a bad stretch. I think it was about 20 guys and since COVID, Buster, and every time it happens, man, I just feel like a little piece of my, you know, glory days of baseball kind of leave. You know, it's hard to hear these stories. I don't know what you can do.
Without a doubt.
Yeah,
without a doubt. And it and he was one of those guys that seemed like really enjoyed the Hall of Fame. It's one of the things that I really thought was great this year was the fact that Ichiro, it looks like he's going to be the guy who takes the torch from Johnny Bench at some point. I mean, the fact that Ichiro was going to the Hall of Fame, you know, even, 2006, 2007, on his own, just going there because he loved baseball, and he's gone back there multiple times, you know, long before he got in the Hall of Fame, he will be one of the standard bearers going forward. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Buster, appreciate your time, man, as always. Love having you on. We'll catch up again after the break.
All right. I always love talking to you guys.
Appreciate you, Buster.
Appreciate it. Buster Olney, ESPN. I meant to say after the deadline, not after the break, but, you know, either way.
Yeah, he's going to be on at 3:05 today. Buster Olney will be our guest. Surprise.
Exactly. What did I just miss?
No, he was joking he said, we'll talk to you after the break. And so I was saying he's going to be on at 3:05.
Okay, I get it. Yeah. Good one, Chris.
Thank you.
It sounds like there's going to be a ton of movement. I think this is good for baseball. If there's a bunch of moves right at, you know, the last 48 hours of the deadline.
Deadline just gets everybody excited. I mean,
We often have complained that there's not enough movement. It doesn't seem like that's going
to
be the case.
No, it's our nature to embrace something new. Even if we lost Dylan Cease in a trade, but we got Charlie Morton, we'd go, all right, we got Charlie Morton.
I don't know about that one.
Well, he's 7-1 in his last 8 games.
Don't poo-poo Charlie Morton, because you know who else you poo-pooed last year? Martin Perez. And then he came over here and was, I mean, he didn't pitch in the postseason, but until we got through the regular season, he was awesome.
You know,
so if we get another one of those, we'll take him.
I completely forgot about Martin Perez.
I know. Those cats, the unsung heroes just kind of go away. You forget about it. But he was terrific the whole last 2 months of the season for the Padres. All right. Let's get to break. 3 o'clock hour on the other side. Are we doing a little Daily Gambit?
I don't think so. I got a few other things. I want to save the Daily Gambit for after.
Later.
Yeah, I got stuff I got to get to you about, Tony.